discussion. This is really not a hearing, a committee hearing, so I don't really need the gavel. So I'll just put that down. I'm Representative Patty Fritz, and I serve on a number of committees. Commerce, I'm the co-chair of in the House, and the Health and Human Services, both Finance and Policy Committees. I'm an old nurse, retired nurse, but I still have my license. I can work. So this gig doesn't work. I have another job to go to. Very, very fortunate to be here. I'm in my fifth term and have been on the task force for a few years. I was appointed by Speaker Margaret Kelleher, and I was very happy with that. I've been involved in issues of this nature for most of my adult life. So, again, welcome, and I'm going to just ask the representative to my left to introduce himself, and we'll just go around, everybody give a brief introduction, and then we'll get on with our work. Ben?
Thank you, Representative Fritz. My name is Ben Lean. I'm the state rep from Moorhead here. It's my first term and first term on the task force here, and very pleased to be a part of this. It's certainly some good work I feel that we can do through this task force. I also serve on the Higher Education Committee here in the House, Judiciary, Property Tax, and Government Operations.
Where are you from?
I'm Nick Yeager. I'm with Minneapolis Urban League. I'm a director of Wealth Accumulation Intersection, and I'm very happy to be here to learn.
Welcome. My name is Galen Smith. I am part of ADAPT Minnesota, a disability rights direct action group, as well as I work at SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. And I heard about this because there's a group of folks through the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities who are working on wanting to do something about the fact that folks with disabilities are told we're not allowed to have assets, particularly if they're on MA, and so want to do something to give folks with disabilities the opportunity to build assets without losing everything that all the services that they need.
My name is Will Martin. I'm representing LSS, Lutheran Social Service. I'm actually just kind of here to learn. I'm an intern there, so.
Good, welcome. Hi, I'm Jenny Larson with Three Rivers Community Action. We're a community action agency serving Rice, Goodhue, Wabasha, and Olmsted counties in southeastern Minnesota. We do a wide array of housing programs, including a lot of homeownership initiatives, and we really feel like homeownership is a great asset-building tool, and you'll hear from me later, but I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Carla Bachman. I work for Clues, and we have developed an array of financial empowerment services to help the newcomers get stable and then build assets and prosper.
I am Pam Johnson with Minnesota Community Action Partnership. We're the statewide network of community action agencies that serve all 87 counties in Minnesota, and we work a lot on financial asset building.
Good afternoon. My name is Anna Ross. I'm the executive director of BGWIN Community Development Loan Fund. We're an emerging native CDFI. BGWIN means coming home in Ojibwe, and it is that's our mission, is homeownership.
My name is David McGee, and I'm the executive director for Build Wealth Minnesota, and we do a long-term approach of stabilizing families through a program called the Family Stabilization Plan. We're also a community development financial institution as well that helps provide affordability gap financing and low affordable loan products to help families build.
Hi, I'm Allison Grebner, and I work in government affairs at the Department of Commerce.
Hello, Trish Olson with University of Minnesota Extension.
Hello, my name is Dan Duhamel with Department of Human Services out of the Office of Economic Opportunity.
Good afternoon, Tracy Fishman, the Executive Director of Accountability Minnesota. I'll tell you a little bit more about our organization in a bit.
My name is Ann O'Connor, and I am the designee to the committee from the Department of Commerce.
Yes. Join us.
Sorry, I'm late. I'm Katie Topinka. I'm the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Okay. Wow. It's from all over, all walks of life, all areas. As I'm sitting here listening and thinking about, the days when I was living in government housing or trying to get into government housing and almost living in my car, thinking about the services that you all, what wonderful, wonderful work you are able to do and how necessary it is and how it wasn't there not too long ago. So thank you and welcome. We do have a couple of business things to take care of, and one of the first things that we want to do is make it legal for me to sit here as your chair. So we need an election, and I'm not sure yet. I'm waiting to see. There, Sarah, she's going to join us. I saved you a chair. So we'll get hopefully enough of us to take care of the business. Welcome. This is Representative Anderson. I'll let her introduce herself as soon as she gets settled and tell you a little bit about yourself. Everybody's kind of...
Okay, I apologize for being late. I was just finishing up some constituent work upstairs. I have a cold, so I will try not to breathe on anybody here today. But this is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. So glad to see all of you here and eager to look forward to hear what your suggestions are. So.
Thank you. Welcome. Well, we just talked about the first item on the agenda, and that's the election of officers. And I thought that, for myself, I do want to put it out there that I'd be happy to chair this group going forward, and I'd have to be legally elected to do that. So I do we have now Ann is able to vote? Mike, is that correct? And the four of us up here are...
One
more.
Okay.
So well, hopefully that person will show up in the next hour and a half, and that's been the time that we have today. So, but I just wanted to put that out there that I'd be happy to continue to do this, and that's that. So we also have in our packet, and you probably already have taken a look, a pretty. Long agenda, a lot of information, so I'd like to get to that as soon as possible. The review, of course, of the minutes, you can take a look at those. And I thought we should probably get right into our first presenter because we have a number of them, and I know that they have a lot of good information to share with us. So if that is okay with everybody, I think we could ask the first presenter. On the asset building and overview, mm-hmm. And who would that be? Who's going to do? Are you doing that?
Yes. I'm Tracy Fishman.
And you can do it right from there.
Great.
Okay.
Excellent. Again, Tracy Fishman with Accountability Minnesota. And I'm just going to give you a quick overview of our organization and then provide the context for when we talk about asset development or asset building, why that is sort of an emerging narrative for this work. One more, sorry. So this is, it might be a repeat for a couple of you. We talked a little bit about this framework at the last task force meeting. But just for some very brief background information about our organization and how we fit into this work, Accountability Minnesota has been around for over 40 years. We promote and facilitate financial stability for low and moderate income households by providing free tax and financial services. In 2013, we have served a little over 13,000 people with free tax assistance by leveraging the assistance of 550 trained volunteers who are trained on an array of elements to provide free taxes, to review tax returns, to be financial advocates, et cetera. And we come into this work recognizing that for so many of the people that we see, tax time is this, one time of year where there, many of them are shoring up their income by as much as 40%. There are many of them who have dependents receive refundable tax credits like the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit, other kinds of tax credits, including state tax credits. And for many of them, it is the one time that we really see an opportunity to talk about saving. And for people that don't have bank accounts, we partner with financial institutions. We can open up bank accounts for them using their refunds as direct deposit to direct deposit into those accounts. And we do as much as we can to really say, what does it mean for you to think about saving a portion of your refund for an unexpected emergency, for your financial future, for your children, et cetera. And we are also in the process of building a deeper financial coaching program that will really be scaled up through also trained volunteers. And, of course, we work in partnership with an array of corporate, public, and other nonprofit organizations, many of whom are here today. And we're excited about the possibilities of what we can do through this task force. And we see the work that we do fitting within this broader framework that a national organization called CFED, Corporation for Enterprise Development, but really is they refer to themselves as CFED. They have put together a very useful tool, the Household Financial Security Framework. One of the handouts that you had was 4 pages, and on the second page, you'll see this framework. And the framework is designed to address not just income poverty, which is unfortunately continues to grow in this country, not just in urban areas, but certainly in suburban communities and in rural communities. So certainly your districts are affected, as well as, you know, the people that we serve here in this room. But they have really looked at what does it take for a household to get by for 3 months if there is some change to their income or unexpected emergency. And through their research, they have found, while it varies not even just by state, but also when broken down by community or by other demographics like race and ethnicity, that nationally, over 40% of households are asset poor, meaning if they were to weather something that would be unexpected for them, they would not be able to have enough income to get by for 3 months. And so we think that it is a useful framework for us as we think about this work, not just thinking about income poverty for families, but also thinking about asset poverty. And so this idea of asset building and wealth creation, we think, is a useful narrative. And they have created this framework that has a number of components that families need to really get ahead, to move from, you know, just getting by to thriving. So learn, you know, the financial education, whether it's access through public schools or any kind of schools, K-12 education, financial education and counseling. A lot of the organizations in this room are doing that kind of work. But that alone is not sufficient if you don't have other tools and other policy supports and methods to really support your family on the road to prosperity. So there is the earn component that has to do certainly with your wages, other kinds of income coming in, which can include refundable tax credits, which shore up your income at tax time, other kinds of benefits that households might receive, and then moving to that next stage of actually being able to save a portion of your income and not touching it. And we talk to a lot of people who really want to be able to save for their future, feel like income is a barrier for them, also feel like there are other kind of access to mainstream financial institutions that can be barriers. So there are a lot of things that I think the legislature can think about as we promote savings opportunities. There are examples in local communities where in San Francisco, every kid who goes into kindergarten is getting a saving account in his or her name. And that is because there's research that shows that kids that have accounts in their name, by the time they graduate from high school, even if it's about $500, are 6 times more likely to go on to college than those that don't. So it's not an inexpensive endeavor, but it is one that pays off in the long run, has benefits to our economy, has benefits to local businesses and communities. And then that final piece of investing, so you move to save, and then what does it mean to invest for retirement? Invest a portion of your money the way that higher wealth communities can do. And there are ways that we can promote and facilitate that, sometimes that are as basic as working with employers to offer retirement accounts and encouraging people to have an opt-in instead of an opt-out, kind of using something called behavioral economics research and methods. And then finally, the fifth component of this is around protection. And what is it that we need to do to make sure that people are not falling prey to scams, falling prey to, you know, kind of predatory, you know, folks that are coming after them, whether they be debt collectors or, frankly, some of the alternative financial products out there that if you annualize them, they end up being 607% APR because people have no way of accessing credit, so they have to turn to things like expensive payday loans and other methods because they can't have access to capital otherwise. And so in all of this, what does it mean for us to shore up people's, you know, basic needs and facilitate the path to prosperity for families? And this task force is really positioned right in the midst of that. So I think I will leave it at that for now because you're going to hear some really great examples of wonderful work that our partners are doing around the state that kind of falls into any number of these segments or sections of the framework, unless you have any questions or comments on that. Okay.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much. I do want to say that before Ann O'Connor talks, I am having Ann and her department down to Faribault to my community center in November 12th, I think it is, and to discuss the issues around frauds that seniors have been taken advantage of. And I actually have in my own family a lovely couple who sent $2,500 off to their grandson, and he didn't need it, and they're out, yeah. And so this does happen, and it is one of those areas of concern that we can take a look at and see what we can do in order to help them. So I'm very happy they're coming down to Faribault, and that's part of this task force as well. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. So with that, I'm going to introduce Ann O'Connor from the Commerce Department, and she has the next information for us to listen.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. As everyone in this department knows, or in this room, I should say, knows, our department regulates much of the economy, whether it's banking, insurance, or securities, and therefore we play quite a large role with a lot of people in this room. But one of the things that Commissioner Rothman has been focusing on since he became commissioner a couple of years ago is the need to reach out to consumers on not only consumer protection but on financial literacy in general. And so we've had quite a few successful financial literacy months in the past few years, and our focus has been on financial literacy across the life cycle, so starting with youth into college, as adults when we make our financial decisions, buying homes and even our insurance products, and then as we save for retirement and move into our senior years. So what we're doing currently is continuing in that vein. It's not Financial Literacy Month. I just want to make sure you all know that. It's in April again this year. But what one of the things that we're focusing on currently is implementing a new media outreach plan. And so the best way that we can implement and raise the awareness of the importance of financial literacy is really truly to partner with most of the people in this room. And so as we leave, if we don't already have something with one of you, please let me know, and we can work together in the future to bring some attention to the programs you're working on. But first off, we're still very involved with the Jumpstart board. I'm on the board. We have been asked to participate in a Bank on Leadership Committee with the Northwest Area Foundation looking into potential bank on opportunities for the Twin Cities and Minnesota. And then as often as we can, we like to be a part of the Minnesota Financial Fitness Network and all of the people in this room who participates in that. So with our new media outreach plan, we're looking at, we're starting with podcasts. We're moving to a blog. We'll have blog posts, updating our gov delivery, and updating our website content to make sure that we have good, useful information for consumers. And then we'll also be scheduling consumer alerts and news releases on a regular basis. And unfortunately, because we are all so busy in state government, the interagency workforce that we created a couple of years ago has found it difficult to continue throughout the year, and we're going to try to figure out ways that we can work together, and potentially new media is the best way to do it, where we can all talk more via, you know, email or, you know, Twitter or social media, whatever, to make sure we're elevating what we all do across the state agency. So that will be coming. Today is actually the start of National Safer Retirement Week. I don't know if anybody in here was aware of that. And so to kick off National Safer Retirement Week, Commissioner Rothman, we're kicking off and launching our first blog post. Commissioner Rothman, he interviewed Nathan Dungan of Share Save Spend, right? Did I get that backwards? Well, regardless. He interviewed him last week about how the steps that you can take, the easy steps that you can take and implement in your life to start saving today, and we'll be launching that this week. So be on the lookout for the podcast and our upcoming blog. The other thing we're doing is keeping our outreach efforts strong and engaging all aspects of all demographics of Minnesota. The commissioner will be in northern Minnesota and the Iron Range this week for a couple of meetings, and we also are, while we're there, doing some senior fraud protection outreach events with the Itasca County Sheriff's Department, AARP. Representative Moline has also agreed to host something. And then we're also visiting various credit unions and banks while we're there to talk about the efforts that are happening in our Northland of Minnesota. We're also engaging quite a bit in just senior fraud protection in general, so we're trying to have fun with it, and we'll do a reverse trick-or-treat on Halloween, reminding seniors of the importance to be careful about fraud, and that's in St. Paul. And we're also launching a, as Tracy said, the importance of children and youth opening bank accounts. The Commissioner Rothman will be working with United Educators Credit Union to show kids and parents how their kids can successfully open bank accounts. So we're trying to make it interesting and span it across everything. But again, we are only as good as all of the great work in this room. So please contact me if you have any further suggestions.
Thank you, Ann. Any questions for Ms. O'Connor? Then we'll move on. I do see David McGee is up next. Welcome.
Thank you. Today I just wanted to talk a little bit about Build Wealth and a program that we're doing. Build Wealth Minnesota is in its 10th year of operation here in the Twin Cities, and we have a metro-wide approach. However, we are housed in the Minneapolis Urban League building. And what we've been doing, Build Wealth has three overarching directives that we try to help families build sustainable social and economic wealth and lower the cost of money. Through our program, we've created what we call the Family Stabilization Plan that I've just handed out. It's kind of a unique two-year process. We had found that families really need a real hands-on approach to transforming their lives. A lot of families that we work with are both socially broken as well as are facing some economic challenges. And so through the Family Stabilization Plan, we've created an opportunity with a number of partners in this room, an opportunity to bring not just financial literacy, but to bring a financial literacy approach that had an applied learning principle where we weren't just teaching them to get a certificate. We were literally having families each week meet for like 12 weeks in a row, first of all, through the literacy component. And between each week, they actually have to apply the learning principles to what they're going through in their own family. We deal with the entire family. So what we do is we take cohorts of 30 to 50 families at a time every 60 to 90 days, go through this continuum of learning this process. They go through the 12 weeks, then they're paired up with a case manager that works with them for about 12 to 20 more months, literally going after the family goals and benchmarks that we have for each and every family in the program. Our family size is usually about four families. The family members come, we invite the entire family, and we found through research that they're touching another 12 families. So we're technically touching about 24,000 families and people each year with this model. We do a whole bunch of work with a bunch of people around the table. As you can see, we work together with this. There's pretty pictures in here, but we really do the work. As many of us around the table we're partnered with, we actually work together with a great deal of organizations, building relationships. We've kind of redefined what social wealth is, and it's critical that if we're going to help them build assets and build economic wealth, social wealth has to be addressed. And so we have a lot of families that, when we talk about social wealth, we have a lot of families that are going through generational patterns of lack and poverty. So we got a lot of relationships that need to be restored, relationships that need to be started, and we need to teach them how to enter into healthy relationships. And so part of the literacy is really defining what that is first. And so we have a value-based approach where we get families to reprioritize the values in their lives, all surrounding family. And then we teach them the systems of banking, systems of housing, systems of insurance, systems of all of these different systems, and we literally have them apply them back to what their families are going through. It gives them a hands-on approach to the things and what to avoid as they're starting to get into different products that their families have historically lost a lot of wealth and lost a lot of assets and don't have the position, are not positioned to actually gain assets. So we work together building relationships, empowering families. We have a lot of families that we reach that don't believe that there's even an opportunity for change. And so we try to bring that education and through all the different resources of a lot of providers in this room, we help them to access resources they may not have known. As you were saying earlier, Representative, is that you didn't even know these things exist. And so through these networks, and we access about 19 different churches and about 11 different organizations where we consider community access points that make it known that the products even exist. Through this long-term approach, we're actually nurturing hope and changing the whole family. And so that has been our approach in getting them. As you see the last page, we take families, really, we've taken about 12 programs, and we put it all into one comprehensive approach through a two-year continuum where they're getting the financial literacy. They're also getting a budgeting coach. They're actually dealing with credit issues. We're building the saving and the assets. We're getting free financial planners that are helping them. Home buyer education and home is a major issue. We've got a lot of families that are burdened by housing, both in rental and in affordable home ownership. And so we're teaching folks about not just how to get a house, but how to keep a house. And so housing is a huge part. Giving back to community, we have a lot of really developmental products that we use to help the families. So instead of them just getting into an asset, we have asset building products so that maybe at 7% as opposed to 22% that are helping the families build real sustainable assets. And we don't let go of their hand. We literally hold their hands, and we literally link them to other organizations that are in this room so that they have a real good opportunity to build sustainable wealth and opportunity. As part of some of the things that Build Wealth has been engaged in later here recently, we are also working with the Bank On Leadership Committee, and I'm actually on the leadership team, trying to get folks that are underbanked and unbanked to be utilizing, real products, that getting them to a place through the continuum so that they're actually able to learn what it is to have a bank account and what it is to have other financial, services that can help build wealth for their families. We're also engaged in the Asset Building Coalition, and we have initiated through the African American Leadership Forum a bill that we plan on putting through this session called HOME, the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable, and it's House Bill 1603, and Karen Clark is the author. That's House Bill 1603. Minnesota Housing is in the room. We had actually presented this bill before we actually moved it forward to Commissioner Tingerthal, and she was able to get staff to go through this year to provide $10.5 million in support for effective lending opportunities for families that still weren't there yet, that still needed the education in order to get into sustainable housing. The bill that surrounds closing the disparity gaps in affordable housing, which is critical. The families that we're working with is primarily people of color, and in the state of Minnesota, as you know, the disparity gap in housing and employment and business development, we are the worst in the nation. And so we've been literally using these platforms of building wealth to begin to start closing some of those disparity gaps. We're also engaged with Everybody In, and also we work with the opportunity to try to get families into entrepreneurship. And so we got a real, and it's very comprehensive. It is a two-year approach, which is seems like a long time for a lot of folks, but families that were getting engaged in our program are finding that it took them several years to get into the mess, so to speak, and they have found that this long-term approach is effective, and they're starting to see week after week their families be in a position to gain the sustainable wealth that this program has been doing and has been providing for their families. Thank you.
Yes, questions? Representative.
Can you tell me from what you've done so far, what has been your success rate? Have you been able to measure, you know, how many families have you been able to put in a financially good state? I mean, what kind of stats, how have you been tracking it, or have you not gotten to that point?
Yeah, we've been tracking. When we first started, Wilder Foundation gave us some really good tracking mechanisms to track families, and then CURA, the Center for Urban, it's Urban and Regional Affairs. also did a very extensive opportunity. They came in and did a summary, and they gave us some really good tracking tools. Right now, we have the program takes about 500 families that go through this process every year and engage in this. And right now, we have a 90% retention rate with families that start. We actually have tracked this that we're earning about $12 for every $1 spent in terms of a social return on investment. 90% of the families that go through have workable budgets that come out. I would say about 83% of them are actually saving money, actually saving where they've never saved any money before. We have a very impressive rate of the families that actually go through the two-year process. 35% of them are actually going into sustainable home ownership at this point. And more than 60% are literally going through our program that are saving money, that they came in with situations where they were cost burdened, and we found them to go through and actually got into affordable housing opportunities. I think we're one of the only programs that can probably boast we've had about five families so far that have gone from foreclosure, never should have got in the house to begin with, back to affordable rental, and then into home ownership again in a two-year period. And that's phenomenal. And we've done that with a number of folks. And we've actually gotten folks to let go of houses because they never could afford them when they first got in. They literally got into predatory practices and $1,400 a month for a mortgage payment, and they only made $3,000 a month. So we've done some very effective work, and we've been tracking it, and we've got some pretty good data to support.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's great to hear, and be curious to hear all the other different groups that are here at the table today and also in the audience to kind of hear what your results have been. And then also kind of as a follow-up to that, I'm picking on you because you're the first
that's,
one.
That's great. That's great.
Apologize.
Okay.
But I'd also like to know, so you said that about 83% got to the stage where they were actually have a savings account, which is phenomenal. Did you guys then have the opportunity, were you given the data then to go back to the remaining 17% to ask them, why is it that this didn't work for you, or, you know, kind of do a follow-up to figure out how can we reach that remaining 17%?
Well, yeah, we've been doing a lot of work, and so our program is a lot of the families that that go through our program, the other 17% and a large part of the 83%, we're in situations where they needed workforce development opportunities. And so a lot of them were literally living, you know, above their means and were caught in dead-end jobs. And, you know, they literally were in an impoverished generational pattern of not earning enough wages to even support their families. So we have families, our average earning size is like $38,000 for a family of four. So when you got a family like that, it makes it very difficult to even be able to save. And so we've been helping families to literally find out what gifts and talents they have. We got them engaging in workforce development projects. Urban League has a project where we send them through their workforce center. We've gotten a lot of opportunities where they started to get retrained so they're making more money so that they can even be able to save. And so when we find that they're not able to save. One of the biggest parts of our program, you have to save. all of us. If I asked everybody in this room, have they ever been broke before? And probably 100% of us, usually we get two hands are up. And so when we're finding that in our program, we've got to find a way to save money. And usually when one catastrophe is all it takes, $500 is usually what takes a person into a tailspin into bankruptcy. And now we've got these sexy products of payday lending and payday advances and different things that are keeping these people in on a treadmill of staying in there. And so it's very hard and difficult to try to save any money when you found yourself on this treadmill. And sometimes it takes as much as a whole year just to get people off of that pattern in order to be able to start building up savings and assets. Did that answer your question? Maybe in too many words.
Not at all. That's very good information. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about myself. When my parents gave us all, you know, a savings account when we were young, and we all went to the bank and we did that and probably had, you know, a little bit of money in it and took it out and spent it, and then ended up, you know, going through nurses training, getting my job, and not having a savings account for many years until my employer offered an opportunity to take it out of my check and put it into the bank. I didn't have to, you know, have the check in my hand and then, you know, get greedy and think, I'm not going to save. So that was actually, I was just remembering back how having that help to do that actually gave me more money in savings. And I still, you know, to this day carried that on, but not a lot, but it gave me that. I just stood up and a little straighter. So I knew if I did have a big car issue, I could pay for it. But not, you know, and I think that helps so much when the employer is involved, just that little bit. Yeah. So you've done quite a bit, so yeah. Thank you. That just covered, I think, a lot of territory for us. So the next presenter is Patricia Olson.
Hello there.
Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation to present today. Boy, I'm really inspired by Mr. McGee. It's wonderful to hear what's happening in the organization that you're working with. And it made me even more committed to think about sharing with you the need to have trained folks out there to do personal financial education. Not everybody lives in your neighborhood or in your area. And so how do we get quality training out to all of Minnesota? And so what I'm talking about is, in addition to Four Cornerstones, I have a handout that looks like this, and it's about a wide range of trainings in Minnesota for folks who do conduct training of agency staff in the area of personal finance and financial literacy. I had the role the last few years of being in a leadership capacity with the Minnesota Financial Fitness Network. And it takes a village. And so I'm representing a village of agencies who are in the room today, and I'm just one of many of them and honored to share our collective work. Financial literacy, financial security is a dynamic area. If you wrote a curriculum 5 years ago, it is out of date today. We are no longer printing ours at the University of Minnesota. We're putting it so we can quickly modify it and change it. And the reason is that it's a dynamic arena that we work in, both in the products that are available from our financial institutions, whether they're really the good ones or the real shifty ones. And there's also, just as dynamic as the good things are, so are those nasty folks out there who try to take advantage. And so the scams and frauds multiply as fast as the good things are out there. So our training of our staff and our curriculum has to be as dynamic as those folks out there trying to take advantage of the folks that we work with. And so I want to share with you kind of a continuum of training that's available in the state of Minnesota and look forward to your thoughts if we could expand it. We're keeping busy now, but we know that we need to keep up with what's going on. So the four curriculum that I'm going to talk about is Four Cornerstones, Dollar Works, a work we have with Disaster, and also the Financial Educator Certificate Program. I'm with the University of Minnesota Extension, and we do things beyond hold classes for credit. In my role with Extension, my role is to work with community partners to train folks without who are not in a credit class. And so that's kind of where I come to this. My colleagues who developed the four cornerstones of financial literacy, as you look on the backside, is a little bit of their data, and I do believe Pam Johnson will be sharing more specifically about that curriculum. But it's amazing the kind of training people are hungry for. Over 1,600 agency staff have been trained in the state of Minnesota that work on the four cornerstones of financial literacy, and because of its popularity, a second version with dealing with financial security. That's a lot of folks out there that desperately want to not only want the training themselves, but want to share it with their staff. So we have a really good workforce out there who have received 2 days of training, lots of discussion. It's an intense workshop to learn about personal finance so that they, in turn, can share it with others. We find in all the trainings that I'll be talking about is that the folks who go through training learn as much for their own personal finance as they do in order to train for others. It's a lovely place when you can apply what you learn personally. And that's what our agency staff do. The second curricula that I'll share with is DollarWorks, which is out of the University of Minnesota. And that, too, is a basic financial literacy curriculum. But what we've done in the training perspective, we partnered with another agency who works in personal finance, the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. We've taken what I call train the trainer and put it on steroids, where they mentor with an extension educator who goes home with them and helps them implement it in both planning, implementation, and evaluation. And so, again, a kind of a continuum. We actually find some trainers take more than one of these trainings because they're so hungry to keep up on what's happening in the area of personal finance and so badly want to protect the people they work with. Where we have trained fewer people with personal finance, we've documented more the documentation kind of goes out further. And both of these curriculum reach a vast number of folks through the programs they work with. Also, both curriculum are really attuned to the needs of diverse families. Four Cornerstones is both in Spanish and Hmong. Yep, yeah. And then DollarWorks is in Spanish. What we also find about financial literacy, to be most useful, it needs to be relevant for the folks that it's reaching. It has to be timely. That's where the next one comes in, recovery after disaster. Some of you have heard Mark Seeley, who constantly is telling us it's going to be every rain in the fall is now a flood. And what we found is that folks are not necessarily prepared for that. And so we did at the University of Minnesota, and in partnership with our colleagues across the Red River at NDSU, developed a curriculum for how to respond to a disaster. We wish folks were more likely to prepare for disaster. Unfortunately, many respond. And so how to do that to the best of their ability. Fortunately or unfortunately, this has a national, whenever there's a crisis, our colleagues around the country are using this curriculum also. And finally, as we think about the continuum of financial education, like I said, the agency staff that are being trained by the curricula out there are yearning for more and more information. And so now we are just piloting. Our first cohort has started this fall. It's called the Financial Education Certification. And a number of people in this room are a part of that. The University of Minnesota has the infrastructure to help facilitate it. Dr. Kathy Solheim has worked with some United Way funding to get this off the ground, and Extension helps facilitate it. But those who go through this, it's almost like a college course. Unfortunately, no credit, but they will be getting intense training with a cohort in a blended learning where it's both online and conference calls, blogging, and those agency staff will get even greater training and more intense training in personal finance. We feel this is needed because we often find our agency staff can't get away to come to training. They are so needed at their home. They are so tightly staffed. They need another option to learn, and also they want much more in-depth training. So in conclusion, just wanted to say there's a wide range and I think a good continuum of education, and that this, what we're doing mostly, what my presentation was about, training those agency staff out there that are in turn training the population of Minnesota. And we think that, just as Mr. McGee shared, you know, you could see kind of the energy he has. He can't be everywhere. We need quality educators everywhere in the state. And the agencies that work on these curricula are committed to doing conducting that. Thank you.
Can you help me remember again? So are there county extension agents in every single county in the state of Minnesota?
That's a good question. And I think there are extension agents, and we call them educators now, in every state of Minnesota, but that doesn't mean there's one that works in personal finance. So it might be agriculture, youth, or family development. Okay.
Madam Chair, can you also let me know, so then does the U look at statistically each of the counties on, you know, what, where they are at from poverty guidelines? Now, I don't know if this is still the case, but Todd County, for example, used to be the poorest county in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it still is, but I think it's probably still close to the bottom, unfortunately. But do you then focus your efforts on counties that have that higher need, or perhaps counties that have a higher influx of an immigration population that maybe isn't culturally in tune with what saving mechanisms we have in the state? How do you guys allocate your resources to hit on those folks?
Those are great questions. So a few years ago, we looked at, are we meeting the needs of Spanish-speaking immigrants? And we looked at, statistically, many are in the southern, south of the cities area of the state. And so we put on an effort to hire. Actually, we brought on Vista volunteers and used that as a training program, and then we ended up hiring 4 Latino educators from that to meet the needs. So we do look at those statistics, and that was probably prior to the recession. Now we're in a state where we're really trying to hang on to resources to meet the needs of low-income families. Absolutely, we look at the statistics and how can we best meet. And we do a lot of sharing. We do a lot of online education. Although it's a little tangent here, but it's one of our largest programs in extension is SNAP Ed, and where we help people stretch the resources they have that they receive with previously called food stamps or food support. Obviously, nationally, that's in a big conundrum right now, and with what's happening federally. So that makes us have to rethink, okay, if we're getting less funds, how do we stretch those resources to those areas? So we are almost on a daily basis poring over where we can align our resources to meet the needs of low-income families. Wish we didn't have to do it so, but we have to. Resources only go so far.
Well, and we're well aware of that up here. And I have had in Bryce County and Steele County a Vista worker that a few years ago, a young woman that was working, but also in Rice County where I live, you know, we had an overflow of applications for assistance, and the financial workers were just, they had stacks that they couldn't get to, and had to ask the department up here to come down on weekends, which they did a couple of times. So your group would have, you know, there's definitely a need, and I think a bigger need than any of us realize. I know that there's a huge need up here in the metropolitan area, but we go all the way down to the bottom of the state where I have a large Latino population and Somali population as well now. And I don't know that we have a whole lot of outreach there. And I know my financial workers they are so overworked. So it's a great service that you provide. I wish we had more of you and that we could teach others, and even the financial people that are doing this should have more information so that they could help as well. I hate to put more work on them, but it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's the beauty of that. While I'm here as an employee of Extension, I'm representing all those agencies who are doing training. And so, you know, the CAP agencies, all the other nonprofit agencies out there, we're working together to meet that need. So I appreciate the support for Extension, but that's why we're doing all the training of agency staff, all of us collectively, all the different organizations, because we know no one agency can fill the need, and that's why we have to work together. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that was kind of something I was wondering about. I've had come up a couple of community meetings in Moorhead lately, and that's something I've been hearing about is the need for more collaboration, more cooperation, not just for those agencies and what they can do, but so they can let folks know, you know, if there's not something we can do, here's where you can turn to for that. And so that was just kind of something I was wondering about is where do you see, how do you see improvements that can be made in that respect to reaching out with more, I don't know, nonprofits or even the community actions? Just what type of things do you think could be done to really expand on those collaborative and cooperative efforts?
Well, I think our trainings, that whether it's done through Four Cornerstone or DollarWorks or through the Minnesota Financial Fitness Network or the new Asset Development Network that's developed, it's all about cooperation. And so I think if we cooperate locally, it'll help meet the needs of the community. But I think we all could probably do better in having our local, like, you know, 411 or 911. If somebody asks for help to say a county, do they have that list of folks, a wide range of folks who could help people with education on personal finance? Maybe they need debt consolidation. Maybe they need what Family Means or Lutheran Social Services do with credit counseling. You know, do they understand the continuum in the area of personal finance to all the way to coaching and mentoring? So there's a wide range of things, but I think as agencies, we have a commitment that we should make sure those lists are available to those who are being asked the questions and make sure that facilitation and sharing of the work and the help of education can be to those people who get the requests. So I think a better, we used to call it Beehive or 911, or, you know, a better tool there would be very useful, I think.
Thank you very much. And our next presenter is Pam Johnson.
Yes,
Pam.
Hey, thank
Welcome.
You. Good afternoon. I'm Pam Johnson with Minnesota Statewide Community Action Partnership. And thank you for this opportunity to talk about individual development accounts, or IDAs, a powerful tool for asset building that's really growing in scope and both in the state and nationally. I'm going to talk a little bit about FAME, Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota, and then we're going to hear about another model next from Anna. So Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota, or FAME, is Minnesota's first statewide IDA program launched in 1999. It's had a lasting impact on the lives of thousands of Minnesotans and their communities for over a decade. Through our Community Action Agency network serving all 87 counties, we meet hundreds of thousands of individuals and families each year seeking resources and support to move beyond that paycheck to paycheck or crisis to crisis living towards economic stability. You might know your local CAP agency by its programs such as disaster relief after floods and tornadoes, youth programs like Head Start, Jobs and Training, Meals on Wheels, some affordable housing that Jenny's going to talk about in a little bit, and a lot of other locally determined programs. In 1999, the Community Action Network collaborated with a multi-partner, multi-statewide network to pursue the idea that very low-income people could save money if given the opportunity and the right support and incentives. The national research showed that effective interventions to reduce asset poverty that Tracy defined earlier would combine education with opportunities to learn new financial habits, encourage depository financial relationships, increase usage of tax credits and work supports, and expand savings opportunities. Individual development account programs, or IDAs, like FAME, are designed to include all of those elements. As a Duluth FAME coordinator from 2000 to 2004, I had the thrill of walking alongside participants as they set their goals to purchase their IDA And I'm continually inspired by the stories I hear today. And I think just one short story illustrates best the elements of fame. And I'm going to talk about Linda, who's a mother of two, who worked multiple low-wage jobs after she lost her husband. She supported her family and made ends meet, but she knew she was always one paycheck away from losing her home and needing public assistance. She worked in sales, and she knew she'd be a good business owner if she ever had the means to try it. Linda made significant sacrifices to enter the FAME program, which she heard about from her Head Start teacher, from her son. And she made significant sacrifices to put to deposit $40 a month in her FAME IDA account, which is a bank account I'll talk about a little bit more. And that IDA account was matched 3-to-1. That was the incentive that made her make those difficult sacrifices every month. She said that her FAME account represented hope, and it kept her focused on the future. David talked about that, too, that hope element of these matched savings accounts. She learned and she shared cost savings ideas with her financial education classmates, and that's the four cornerstones of financial literacy classes that she took. Twice she dropped out of FAME due to family crisis, but her coach kept reeling her back in and saying, you can do it, you can come back, you can finish. And they worked together, she came back, she paid down her credit card debt that built up after dealing with a lot of the crisis that she had hit. And they even set aside an emergency bank account so that she didn't have to deal with that in the future. She had a reserve in case her furnace blew or her car needed repairs. She completed the 12 hours of four cornerstones of financial literacy classes, and she completed 10 hours of a small business course prior to her final deposit. 2 years ago, Linda launched her consignment clothing shop, which is in the metro area, and she now is making ends meet her way. She shares her financial skills with her boys, and she reports that her youngest loves to tease her when they go grocery shopping and say, Mom, now is that a want or a need? So he's in on it too. And he also loves to go with his mom to the store and turn over the open for business sign. He says that he wants to go to college, the first in their family, so that he can be as smart as his mom. So this is a story of IDAs and FAME in a nutshell. It's a statewide comprehensive program delivering financial education and asset building services to help low-income Minnesotans gain the skills and assets that they need to leave poverty permanently. Eligible participants with incomes under 200% of the federal poverty level, and that's about $36,000 for a family of three, enroll and establish an IDA bank account to acquire one of three assets, a home, a small business, or a college education. They deposit that $40 a month of earned income up to 2 years, and they receive a 3-to-1 match, which is $1.50 state, $1.50 federal funding. All the account holders complete that 12 hours of financial education, 10 hours of asset-specific coaching, and then address any credit or debt issues and work with their personal financial coach to get any other services that they might need. A multi-partner collaboration delivers FAME. So it's not just community action agencies. It's partnership with Bremer Banks, City County Federal Credit Union, Emerge Community Development, Leech Lake Tribal Government, and then the CAP agencies. Newer partners include Inver Hills Community College, which is focused just on college accounts, and Rice County Youth IDA, too, in Representative Fritz's district. And we're open to expanding those partnerships. We've invited representatives from other IDA programs, such as the Bijou Win and Hmong American Partnership, to participate and share what we're all learning about our IDA programs together and share best practices. So far, over 2,650 Minnesotans like Linda have launched businesses, purchased homes, and acquired college degrees. More than 3,100 people have completed financial education, and over $3 million have been saved by very, very low-income Minnesotans. The average income is actually 145% below that 200% of federal poverty. Your packet contains some research that we did in conjunction with the University of Minnesota's Humphrey Institute and with Gustavus Adolphus College students. They interviewed 326 FAME graduates over the past decade, and the report shows that FAME asset purchases boosted local economies through increased homeownership property taxes, enhanced professional skills, expanded small business purchases, and new jobs. And some of the highlights from the research, and I've got the longer version too if you prefer, is that nearly 90% of surveyed FAME small business owners are still thriving after 2 years, and that's compared to a 44% national average. So that's about double. And over 85% of those pursuing higher education met their goal or were in the process of doing so. There were no reported foreclosures among our home purchasers during the recent foreclosure crisis. And we also found that public assistance usage decreased dramatically following FAME participation, with nearly 60% of participants accessing no cash assistance at program exit compared to 12% at entry. And we believe these outcomes are due to the one-to-one coaching and the support that FAME participants receive for as really as long as they need it. Similar to what David was talking about earlier, they can keep coming back. They can keep getting that support. And the financial educations really alert them to those risky consumer products that Trish was talking about and demonstrate wise financial habits for a lifelong practice. We've also enjoyed strong bipartisan support for the initiative over the years from our original authors, Representative Plenty and Senator Berglund at the time, to recent authors and co-authors, Senator Michelle Benson, Representative Rena Moran, Senator Julie Rosen, Representative Patty Fritz, and many others, including Representatives Huntley and Abler. We're also grateful for support from this task force and task force members in our work to reinstate FAME funding this past year after we lost part of it during the difficult budget balancing years. And I guess I'll close there and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, we'll move on to the next presenter. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Anna Ross. I had to make sure I was supposed to be on the agenda because I feel like I'm the baby of this whole table, and I'm not sure. I want to be all of you when I grow up. we're a very new nonprofit. We have, this October is our birthday. We became our own 501c3 last October. So we've only been up and running for 1 year. Prior to moving to Minnesota, I'm a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Ojibwe, located in North Dakota. And so I worked for my tribe after graduate school on a poverty reduction program. And we did a lot in financial education. We brought it into the high schools, which personally to myself was very important. I was raised by my grandparents along with their 8 children, myself, my sister, and then my brother. So there was a large household. So we didn't get a lot of financial education growing up, let alone a savings account. And so when I turned 18, I got a whole lot of people saying, here's a credit card. Have fun with that. And I did. I had a great time. And then whenever I wanted to become a homeowner, it's like, oh, now what do I do? And so I had to go do a lot of backtracking there. And so that sort of became a passion of mine, is how do we educate people and educate young people specifically so that they don't make those same mistakes. So I had an opportunity to work. I was the executive director of that program in North Dakota. And then in 2011, I moved up here to work on BGWIN, which is an emerging native CDFI. We do homebuyer education classes. We do financial education classes. We also do entrepreneurship classes, and we do one-on-one counseling, and we recently started an IDA program. We have currently 24 participants in our IDA program, which includes adults and youth. And just a few sort of IDA stories, you know, when you're talking about what the success of a program is, it can come in a variety of capacities. In my experience with youth IDAs, we had a young girl from Belfort, North Dakota, grew up on the res her whole life. She was able to go to Dartmouth University in large part to her IDA. And so we were really excited to be a part of that. And then also just recently we had a young gentleman, the week before that, he cashed out his IDA. He has his own business. He's a junior at South High, I believe. We serve majority Native American participants. Roughly 75 to 80% are Native American, but our services are open to everybody. So this junior started his business, and it's a dog walking business, dog walking / pet photography. So he kind of wanted to to amp it up a little bit. But he's super excited. His family's really, really proud. I've also had an experience with, and I've shared this with a few of my colleagues, a young man in our youth IDA. He didn't complete. So there's three assets you can use it for, right? Education, homeownership, or business. And he didn't want to use it for any of those. He withdrew his money. And he withdrew his money to buy winter jackets for his family because he was the first in his family to bring in any sort of income into his household. And so I don't necessarily count that as a negative thing. I count that as a positive thing, and he was a role model then for his brothers and sisters. So this is just some of the work that we've been doing over the past 1 year. But I'm really excited to, like I said, you know, grow up and be like all of you. And I mean, great partners here and the great things that people are doing here in Minnesota. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing and continued years of that type of work. We appreciate that. And I'm going to continue on because we're here till 3, and I want to get everybody in. You may go, you know, 5 or 10 minutes after that, but I just wanted to be aware of the time. So Carla Bachman is here.
Yep. So I wanted to share with you a little bit of how the Financial Empowerment Services started at CLUES. The first job that I had when I came to the United States was as a banker for one of the main banks, and I was asked to form part of a team to help new immigrants acquire bank accounts and understand the system. So I did that for a while working with CLUES as a volunteer. And then I moved to work at CLUES, and I worked for the employment department, who had and we had government programs like TANF and WIA. And the main goal for those programs is self-sufficiency. And let me tell you that I worked over a year on the program, and even if we were able to successfully place a lot of people in employment, self-sufficiency didn't come with just the job. And so we really wanted to embrace the idea of making people feel productive and self-sufficient in advance in their goals and dreams for them and for their families. So that's how we started integrating financial services into the workforce development services that we had. Lots of budgeting and budgeting tools, and mainly self-awareness and connecting them with other programs. We finished the Four Cornerstones of Financial Education program. We created a lot of partnerships with Accountability Minnesota for taxes. And so we started connecting people with all of those resources that would actually reach that goal of financial self-sufficiency. So, you know, through the years, we just realized that we needed more. The people that we work with this type of intergenerational poverty or that are new to the country, need more support. The lack of education or awareness of the financial system, poor credit or not credit at all, are real barriers to self-sufficiency. So responsible lending opens doors to education, homeownership, reliable transportation, and all of these different things that we consider asset building and self-sufficiency building blocks. So in the last years, we were able to leverage some federal money and become a financial opportunity center here through LISC. Financial Opportunity Center really formalizes the integration of education, employment, and financial education for the clients. And so we are able to track through their FICO scores, their behavioral changes on the way that they repay any loans, and we are able to monitor the change of net assets and the change on their budgets. And so it may be that the job that they have right now does not allow them to save more, but if we connect them to other resources, they may be able to spend less, and then we come into the savings. We have been able to expand some of the services into our and integrate them into our other services. For example, we now have embedded financial education to our domestic violence and sexual assault programs, into our Fathers Project. We have been able to move some of these initiatives into rural Minnesota, where a lot of the Latinos really, really need services. So we had
two home rescue fairs, some financial education as well, and then train-to-trainer sessions. And by the end of the year, we're hoping to have two lending circles in rural Minnesota. And the lending circles is the main subject of today's presentation. So lending circles is a... it's a tool used in most of the countries that are cash-based instead of credit-based. And so a group of people between 5 and 12 get together and decide by affinity what the group is going to be and how much they're going to save. So, for example, we have a group that is interested in purchasing a home. So there's a group that have been going through the one-on-one counseling and the home purchasing education, and now they need that extra something that will help them finance their home and have save for their first payment. So people will sign a promissory note on the amount agreed. So for example, if we are 10 people and we decide that we can save $50 a month, we are going to be able to sign promissory notes for $500. Among the group, we also will decide who will get the first money and part of money, and the second and the third, and some people choose to raffle, some people choose based on how ready they are. Groups like the domestic violence and the parents groups, they know each other very well because they meet on a regular basis, so they're able to decide based on what they know about their group who should get the first payment. And so everybody has to have a bank account, and the money is automatically withdrawn from their account, and 2 days later is deposited into the account of the person whose turn it is to receive the money. Each transaction is reported to the Bureau, so they are building credit as repaying a loan. So it's a co-op approach, but taken into what works in the United States. We will be able to implement the first match actual lending circle this year for homeownership as well. So it's something that, you know, they can save, they can build their credit, and they will be able to have a match as well as an incentive. We had zero default so far, and the people that are the administrators of this grant from the Bay Area also have a zero default because this is very community-based. This is something that the community understands. We had our goals for the one-on-one coaching per year were 300 people. The fiscal year that we closed in September had 647 people. We do no outreach. And so our education classes and the awareness that we present to the community has created that need of people enrolling into the one-on-one and participating in all the other programs that we have, like these lending circles. From the first groups, we have seen an average of 15 points increase on their FICO score from the first 80 people that joined. And we have also seen an increase, almost double, retention of employment rates for people that have been able to combine the education of workforce development, employment coaching, with the added bonus of financial education. Mm-hmm. Because people start to understand that even if the job doesn't pay a lot, the fact that you keep a job for a long time really helps build your credit. It helps that behavior that you can show for underwriting, and so that you can have access to other asset building programs. That's it in a nutshell.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I tried to keep it before 3 so that other people can have a chance. So yeah. If you have any questions, I will be happy to answer.
That's to take in, isn't it? Very good. Any questions? Anybody up here? All right. We're going to move on then to Mike Thorstenson from my neck of the woods. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Representative Fritz and mm-hmm. I guess one member of the committee, two members of the committee. And thank you for our opportunity. I'm going to be very brief because time's getting late, and Jenny will speak for us. But Mr. McGee from Building Wealth made a couple of very important comments that relationships and hope are the key to helping create opportunity for people. So you need to inject that into your staff and into systems across the area, whether it's county, schools, city, state, or federal. Building relationships and building hope is the key to helping get people out of poverty. Second thing is a public announcement at 11/12/13, so fun to say that, in Faribault, Minnesota, following Representative Fritz and Commissioner Rothman in the Department of Commerce, hearing or public meeting at the community center at 3 o'clock that day. We'll be hosting two or three of the people that we have worked with in home ownership, as well as the commission and their staff, to come down and talk about financial literacy and home ownership. So without further, I'll turn it over to Jenny Larson, who is a superb community development director, and she has absolutely been a delight to work with, and we've accomplished a lot of great things together. So, Jenny.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I brought my own
PR firm
to make my introduction. Makes me feel better about myself, I guess. thank you for having me today. I want to talk a little bit about our Achieve Homeownership program. Three Rivers, we're a community action agency, and community action agencies have come up a few times today. We're statewide, and we work with people in poverty, and we work to get people out of poverty. And every community action agency is a little bit different. We run different programs based on our local needs. But we share kind of a mission of empowerment. And so I'm going to talk about one of the programs we put together about 5 years ago called Achieve Homeownership. And it really was meant to address the homeownership gap between white households and households of color in Minnesota. At the time, there was a 34% difference in the homeownership rates from white households versus households of color. And Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, and a lot of other folks were talking a lot about it at that time. And Greater Minnesota Housing Fund put some pilot funds out there for us to sort of put a program together to take a look at that and see what we could do about it in southern Minnesota. Our immigrant populations are mostly Somali, Latino, Sudanese. Most recently, we have a lot of Karen immigrants, so we're starting to work with that population as well. But the first thing we did was start talking to everybody else who's doing this. So we talked to Trish and her staff and at Extension and other homeownership providers. We talked to a lot of lenders and real estate agents and other service providers in the immigrant communities. And over and over, the thing that kept coming up was you need to have a trusted advisor model. You have to have somebody that people can trust, that people will believe in, and who will spend some time with them. And so you hear a lot today about coaching and relationship building, and we took that to heart. And the staff that we hired have taken lots of training, and they're now the trusted advisors in our region. We have two staff dedicated to this initiative working. One of them is a Latina, and she serves the Latino population, but she also has done a great job making friends with the Somali community and has really built a relationship within the Somali community as well. And then our second advisor is Sudanese, and so she can provide the services to the African immigrant populations in she speaks Dinka, and so she can, you know, provide that immigrant experience herself. So our model is really talking about that homeownership. The goal of homeownership is a process, and first you have to have good financial literacy, and then you have to have a budget, and then you have to, you know, have a good job, and then you have to save, and then you have to go get a loan, and then you have to make sure that your loan product is affordable to you. And so there's a whole process there. And our model really is about getting people into the process where they're at. So meeting people where they're at instead of saying everybody has to start with financial literacy. We don't say that. We have a conversation with you, and we find out where you're at. If you need financial literacy, we'll refer you to someone else's program. If those programs aren't there, we've started doing our own financial literacy classes as well. if you're a little bit further along, you're ready for home ownership, or your credit's pretty good, then maybe you need a home stretch class, and we can get you into a home stretch class. Hopefully we can get you into a home stretch class in your native language. So we're teaching them in Spanish and in Dinka, and a couple of times I've seen Umbelina teach it in Spanish, and sometimes with English thrown in there because there's somebody in the room who speaks English, and then she'll have a Somali interpreter in the room as well. So so we try to have those opportunities in their language. And then the last thing we do is really try to have some financial tools available. So we're doing the FAME program, and then we also have the down payment and closing cost assistance program. So we encourage people to save. We require them to have their own savings for homeownership. But a lot of times it's not enough to make homeownership a reality, especially for the folks at the income levels that we're working with. So we have a down payment and closing cost assistance program, again, financed by Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, that really is that last step to help people actually enter into homeownership. So in the last 5 years, we've had 212 households of color achieve homeownership. And at the same time, we've counseled about 660 households, and over 900 households have taken our home stretch classes. So we're really, really trying to do the best we can with the resources that we have. It's a model that does work. And I've brought a couple of stories. They're over on the back shelf. But one of the things we like to do is just have our staff listen to the homeowners, and Margarita is one of them, and she has a pretty interesting story. She got stuck in a contract for deed, which in Greater Minnesota, we have a lot of people who buy their first house on a contract for deed, and it's not a great homeownership tool if it's not done correctly. And she lost that home. Didn't have great credit when she started our process. Her credit kind of improved. But she and her family had been renting a house that had mold in the basement. They couldn't take more than one shower, so they would race to see who could take the shower at the same time. And homeownership was really just something they really wanted. You know, they had tried contract for deed, and it didn't work. And they tried to go to a bank, and they couldn't get approved. And so it took them a while, and we worked through the process with them. And in the end, you know, they were so happy to have a home. And really, the first thing they tried to do was to make it theirs and to really make improvements. And we say this all the time. It's you're not just buying a house. You're buying into a community. And so the last couple sentences of her story, I think, are really important. She said, "I've been working on landscaping and putting in a fence. I have been building the fence myself. I actually cut and measured every board. It's a great feeling owning your own home and investing in it." And I think it's one of those things where we hear the story over and over. It's like the pride that comes with homeownership is so important. So thank you.
You had mentioned that you had gotten 212 individuals into homes over the last 2 years. How many of them are still in their homes?
Well, I haven't heard of very many leaving. Sometimes people leave for jobs, or, you know, statistically people stay in their first home for 5 years. And I don't know that we've tracked. We don't really have a good mechanism for tracking. But if they've gotten our down payment assistance loans, we'll know. Because that is due on sale. It's a loan that they pay back. And I believe we've had just a couple of them move. I haven't seen too many. Yeah.
Oh, very good. I like the picture of the fence. She did a very good job of measuring.
She wouldn't be in the photo. She let her grandson be in the photo, but she wouldn't be in the photo. So she let us take a picture of her fence.
It's a big fence. I thought, wow, she did all that. That's a lot. I'm impressed. Oh, thank you very much. And I think we do still have one more. Katie? Yes, please.
Thank you.
Yes,
not only on my last, but I also have a PowerPoint. But I know we're short on time, so I'll move through this quickly. I'm Katie Topinka. I'm with the Housing Finance Agency. A couple of presenters have already touched on some of the things that I'm going to talk about, particularly Three Rivers and Build Wealth. But just when we saw that you'd be talking about homeownership, we wanted to just have the opportunity to share what the what's happening at a statewide level through the work of our agency. So Minnesota Housing is a state agency. We finance affordable housing for low and moderate income households while fostering strong communities. And we do that through five strategic priorities. So I'm going to be focusing on the first one, promoting and supporting successful homeownership. And Mr. McGee talked about households being cost-burdened, and that's one of the things that we really focus on, is trying to get households to no longer be cost-burdened. And what we mean when we say cost-burdened is a household paying more than 30% of its income for housing. For a lot of rental assistance programs, households must pay 30% of their income toward housing, and then the federal government or someone else may step in to subsidize that difference. And in Minnesota, 30% of households are currently cost-burdened, and for renters, that's much higher. It's at about 50%. So this is just a little picture to show what the agency does, and I'm going to talk more about our single-family programs. But in our multifamily programs, we do new construction of affordable rental housing, preservation of federally subsidized rental housing, and we also administer the state's project-based Section 8 portfolio, which is HUD housing. But on the single-family side, we have a first-time home buyer program, the startup program. Step Up is a refinance program, and then we have a couple of home improvement loan programs. This is just some high-level highlights from 2012, but we served 63,000 households and provided $638 million for housing. Just to note here, 54% of our home buyers assisted had an annual income of under $45,000 a year, and 23% of the first-time home buyers we assisted were households of color, which you heard Jenny talking a little bit about already. So Minnesota Housing has been around for about 40 years, and in that time, we've helped nearly 80,000 families purchase homes. Minnesota Housing doesn't originate our loans ourselves. We work through a network of delivery partners. So for the first-time home buyer loan program, a family would just go to their lender, the community bank or a mortgage broker, whoever it might be, and if they qualify based on income, then they would be eligible to get a Minnesota Housing loan product. So we finance it, but a network of private lenders originate those products. And that's how folks qualify for the products. We have low 30-year fixed interest rate loans. All of the loans are 30-year fixed interest rate loans. I think the handout you have, it says as low as 4%, but interest rates went down a little bit over the weekend, apparently. So I checked this morning, it's 3.875. And we have conventional loans with down payments as low as 3%, and that's one of the only products like that in Minnesota. As you probably, you know, with the recession, things are changing. Underwriting standards are becoming more strict, and down payment requirements are also becoming more strict. And as you know here, saving for a down payment and closing costs is the biggest barrier for low to moderate income households for entering into homeownership, because you know oftentimes they may have the monthly income to support a mortgage, but getting that down payment is really critical. So because of that, Minnesota Housing has three down payment closing cost assistance programs. Again, these are delivered through private partners like community action agencies. There's a monthly payment loan where the income limits are, that's for more moderate income homeowners or home buyers. The income limits are $96,500 for a family of four in the metro area. That loan is an interest rate that's the same as the first mortgage and is paid back with monthly payments along with the mortgage. We have a deferred payment loan for lower income households. The income limit is $50,000 for a family of four. That's no interest. It's funded in part through state appropriations, and it's deferred, so the homeowners pay it back at the point of sale or sometimes if they refinance.
And then home help loan is similar to that deferred payment loan. It's deferred, no interest, but that's funded through federal home dollars, which is a HUD program. And then the other important piece of this that you've heard a lot about already today, so I won't go into it too much, but is homeownership education. And we recognize that successful homeownership really, you know, people need to know what they're getting into. And so programs like Build Wealth do this. The Homeownership Center is a nonprofit that has a network of housing counselors across the state, and anybody can go and get homeownership education prior to buying a house, and for the down payment assistance, it is a requirement. And then we also, on the back end, have provided lots of foreclosure prevention counseling. And when I say we, I mean the network of housing counselors, not the state agency itself, but the nonprofit housing counseling agencies. And that is also funded through state appropriations in part, and also from some federal funds. And then I'll just touch really briefly, we have a couple of home improvement loans, and that really contributes to successful home ownership because it helps people remain in their homes and helps the home stay safe and affordable. So we have a rehab loan program for very low-income homeowners. The income limits are just under $25,000 for a family of four. That's state-appropriated, and it's really for health, safety, and energy efficiency improvements. And then we have a fix-up loan program that serves more moderate-income homeowners. And again, it's really for health and safety and energy efficiency. So you may ask, why does the state provide these programs? Well, because sustainable home ownership is good for communities and the state, it really helps families build wealth responsibly with a mortgage they can afford. And we know for low to moderate income households, often owning a home is the biggest source of wealth or the largest asset that a family can have. And then lastly, I'm just going to touch really briefly on what Mr. McGee and already talked about a little bit, but the homeownership gap. Well, Minnesota has one of the highest rates of homeownership in the country, more than 71%. For households of color, it's less than 40%, and we're actually we have the worst homeownership gap. We've had one of the worst for a few years, and with the recession, it got a little bit worse. And so that's something that we care a lot about at Minnesota Housing and are working on ways to address it. The Emerging Markets Homeownership Initiative started in 2004, and we were one of the agency was one of the founding partners in that. We set goals to serve a higher percentage of emerging markets with our first-time homebuyer loan program. Last year, we did serve 23% households of color with our first-time homebuyer loan program. But we know that more can be done, and that's why, as Mr. McGee talked about, we're starting this targeted mortgage opportunity program this program year, to provide sustainable first mortgage financing opportunities for households facing barriers to credit. And we will be marketing this to emerging markets and to others who may face barriers to credit. And this has become particularly important with, you know, changes to underwriting standards that we've talked about. In the market, it's become a lot more difficult to be eligible. But there are a number of homeowners that the agency considers to be creditworthy, but who are just facing some of those market barriers. And along with the targeted mortgage opportunity program, we have an enhanced financial capacity initiative, which will be focused on this really intensive financial literacy, housing counseling, and case management to make sure people are ready to purchase homes. And we'll be working with community organizations like Build Wealth and others to make that program happen. So tried to move quickly since I know we're short on time, but please let me know if you have any questions or if there's more information you'd like about any of our programs.
Well, thank you, Katie. That was very interesting. I know that we went a little long, but I think all the information was awesome information, and I just want to thank all of you for all of the time and effort that you put into this. And I look forward to working with all of you. I'm sure that I speak for my colleagues also at the table. Lots of good information, important information for us to to work on in the future here at the legislature and beyond. So, and I'm very much looking forward to 11, 12, 13. I didn't think that. At the Community Center in Faribault. You're all welcome to join us. Come to Faribault. Love to have you. And with that, we will adjourn. And thank you again for coming. I appreciate everybody.